Hi, I'm Dave McVeigh, and I haven't played Mass Effect 2 in 21 days.
Hi, Dave.
Thank you. And I'm an addict.
Hi. As soon as we get a camera, we've got a camera now. Hi, I'm Josh Philpott. I haven't played games for 40 minutes, and I am definitely an addict.
Hi, Josh.
Shane?
Hi, Jeff.
Shane doesn't want to play with us, Josh.
Oh, well, that's Shane. Let's move on.
All right, let's move on. All right. Hi, I'm Dave McVeigh. Welcome to Geek Actually Tech, Episode 5 for the 10th of March, 2010. And for those in our chat room, I do sincerely apologize for this. I was saying to Josh, noting the irony that on this tech show that we always seem to have tech problems on. So it's all good, though. We seem to be rolling. We seem to be doing something. So let's get on with this, and hopefully the equipment won't blow up in the meantime. All right, I'm Dave McVeigh. I'm your host, as usual, and I'm joined in studio by the other game addict here. Josh, how are you?
I'm good.
You're good. And I'm also joined by Shane Gregory. How are you, yeah. Shane? Oh, that's not Shane. Sorry, I'm my keyboard's all over the place today. All right, I'm joined by Shane Gregory. How are you, Shane?
Very well, thank you.
And we are all geeks, and we are here to talk about accessible geek for the geek and non-geek alike. Okay, what are we talking about today? I have no idea. So many tech problems, I've completely lost track of everything that I was going to talk about. All right, let's say that we are going to do a little bit of news rundown. We got a little bit of updating from last week. And later on, we are actually going to discuss internet stunts. In particular, we're going to discuss the internet stunt that was done by Conan O'Brien and then copied by Leo Laporte earlier in this week, which I thought was damn funny. We will talk about that in a little bit more detail. We actually have some video from that as well. Okay, first of all, a follow-up to last week. It's a follow-up to 2 weeks ago. We've been following this up every week, as we promised we would. Now, Josh, you remember the story about the students in the Philadelphia?
Oh, yes.
Yes, yes, good. Okay, so the last week, Shane and I were actually saying that you know you've hit the big time when you get a gate after your name, and as it turns out, this has actually happened. Last week, we mentioned the fact that they're now calling it Webcam Gate. Our update on Webcam Gate is that the school district, the Lower Merion School District, has handed photos over to the police. So evidence has actually now gone over to the police. Now, these are the photos that they actually claim didn't exist, so I thought that part was very interesting. Also, the more interesting part, though, is that two of the IT administrators have actually gone on administrative leave. Mm. Now, it seems to me...
admission to guilt so much?
It seems to me a particularly convenient time for them to have been put on to leave. The Lower Merion School District said there's absolutely nothing unusual about them going on to leave at this point. They want to keep them out of the public eye because there is a pending court case on all of this. I think it's not sounding good. But what I did find out, though, guys, was I actually found out a little bit more details on how the system works. You know how you were saying, Josh, we shouldn't be able to do things like webcams and stuff like that without a court order?
Mm-hmm.
Well, here, how about this? According to this article that was from CNET News, they actually went and spoke to the company that puts this equipment together. It's a company called LanRev, LANREV. Mm-hmm. The company has since been acquired by Absolute Software, so I think there's problems there too. But basically what they say is that... when a computer is reported stolen, after a police report has been handed to them, the company that actually administers the webcams, not the school, can we make this very clear? The security company that actually has the tracking system and camera software embedded in this computer then has permission to activate the tracking device producing a police report. And what happens then is that every time the lid is open on the computer, once the tracking device has been activated, the camera fires off every 15 minutes.
Right.
The idea is to try and catch the thief using the computer. So the question is, why the hell was this camera on in the boys' room? That's the bigger question. Right. So,
well, what part of the software failed then, and how did we get to this state?
Say that it looks like to me that the school district themselves were activating the camera, not the IT company.
Do you think maybe the IT company gave them access to it, or
they could? As I say, we will really have to keep waiting to find out a little bit. We're finding out little bits every week. More and more information is coming out every week, but that's the update on it at the moment. We do have photos being handed over. There is a civil complaint filed in federal court in the States, and the company that makes the software has been sold, apparently. So we move on from there. We'll find out more as time goes by.
You'd kind of want to burn that as quickly as you could, get rid of all evidence that linked you at all to this
as
soon as you could.
It's not a pretty situation. Let's just say that. It's not a pretty situation, and I'm with Leo Laporte on this one when he actually did say that he hopes that they get sued out of existence. I agree with him completely. I think it's a horrendous turn of events. But this isn't a show about that.
Nope.
We're going to roll straight into news, Shane, and I believe you've got the first story off the rank.
Yes, I do. Have a nice announcement here for everybody. The iPad does have a release date now.
Finally!
Yes.
But there is bad news to that as well, isn't there?
Yeah, there is. Part of that would be that it just says late April. So, for Australia.
All right, let's make very clear that the release date for the iPad is the US release date.
Yeah.
So, they've actually announced a US release date, which is what? Sorry, it's April.
It says the 3rd of April.
3rd of April. Okay, so 3rd of April is the US release date. And then for the rest of the world, they said, yeah, later.
Late April.
Well, look, I'm still remaining hopeful it won't be too late.
Well, they're saying late April. I think they will finally come out late April. Although it sounds to me, according to the article that Shane has, they're saying something about it could be crippled or something, didn't they, Shane? The iBook store, as an example.
Oh, well, yeah. I mean,
the iBook store still doesn't have anything.
Like... it's going to be a lovely iBook store app.
Yep.
No
yeah. It'll be nice to look at.
Yeah. It'll be so nice empty shelves.
It'll have one book on the shelf that they'll give you for free, and then everything else you're going to have to find yourself.
It'll be that sample, that first chapter, right, of something. At this point, it looks like we're not getting an iBook store to start with, but hopefully it will go. Although, to be fair, at the Apple announcement on the 28th, they did say that it was using standard EPUB. It was using standard EPUB format for books. Is that correct?
I think so, yeah.
Which means that you could theoretically get books from other sources.
Yeah, but...
because there are a lot of online booksellers who are selling digital books. All depends on whether or not the iPad will allow you to play other people's DRM.
Yeah.
Because all iBooks are DRM, except for the public domain stuff. But will it have access to be able to play things like Amazon eBooks and so forth? We don't know at this point. I guess we'll find out at the end of April.
Yeah.
I know I'm still buying one, because the reason why I'm still going to buy one is because during the Academy Awards this year in America, not here, but in America, they actually ran an iPad ad. It was basically the first glimpse of the iPad we've had since the announcement. It's all been very quiet. And this ad came out, and it's very, very quick, and it's really reminiscent of iPod. Ads, you know, the quick music, quick cuts, and so forth. But I thought we'd play it for you right now, because I just thought in 30 seconds they really did sum up everything that's good about the iPad. So have a quick look at this and see what you think.
Be the charming type. Take off your gloves and show what they hide. I'll let you cry if you close your eyes.
And there you go. So let's see. What can we cover in 30 seconds? We can cover reading and writing and design and typing and movie watching. And So I thought it was very nice that they finally gave us a date, and we'll find out a little bit more as we go on. Second up in our news today is, you know what? Oh, yeah, no, we did do that. That's okay. Second up in our news today is Sony.
Yeah.
Has basically come off the post again. Sony, poor old Sony. They have been the beaten down horse for a while now.
They really have, man. I mean, like, we have that article that we pulled up earlier in the week that was talking about the fact that, very, very smartly analyzing, I might say, the fact that Sony have basically been the constant, and it's hard to say these words and for them to really stick until you really analyze the whole article, but they have really been the underdogs. They're always first to the post and last to... last to ever get any recognition for what they do. I mean, we look for as far back as the Walkman, as the article in CNET says, where the Walkman was basically the, you know, I mean, we still consider tape decks Walkmans now.
Oh, absolutely. It was the device of the 80s.
Exactly. It basically, it redefined the whole concept of that. And then along came iPod and basically just smashed them out of existence to the point where the average young person doesn't even know what a Walkman is.
Well, because the Walkman now is basically a phone. Exactly. It's all been melded into one device now. Mm. So.
And then you've of course got the Reader. They had the Reader back in the day, and
they were the first with the Reader.
They were the first with the Reader. They were the first with the concept of taking books and having something where you could portably, you know, carry them around. Yeah. And then they got smashed out. I don't know, originally by Amazon's one. And then later by the Kindle, wasn't it?
Well, Amazon's is the Kindle. No, there was another one in between there, but they never got the traction
exactly
that they needed because other people came along and did it better before they really got a chance to do it.
We'll come back to that in a minute. PlayStation 3, of course, being another one. Of course, me being the gamer,
yes.
Strange that I would bring that up. And it was kind of sad that, you know, it kind of came in, and it took them a good. Solid what? It's been 2 years now?
Yeah,
years?
And it's only now starting to show signs
2 years
of improvement.
It's only just now starting to take improvement. And it's really sad when you think about the fact that they are always the first one with the great new concepts of technology, and then that's
not so
it.
Much. Yeah.
And then they come up with great ideas and then just get destroyed.
Yeah.
And it's unfortunate, but yeah, I totally agree with them. But the problem is they come up with great concepts and just absolutely unusable tech to surround it, and that's I think what my big problem is at the moment with it, is the fact that it just fails miserably. The perfect example is their recent wonderment that is the PSP Go.
Yeah. Which you guys have covered so well on platforms, I must say. But they've got some new stuff that they're developing. It's kind of a non-story really, because it's there's nothing tangible yet.
Mm.
But there's some concepts in the works.
It's again, a cool concept.
It's a cool concept. I think my favorite, I know there's two that you're going to talk about, but I think one of my favorites is the bedside alarm clock, which is also a web browser.
Why? What practical purpose does that
serve? Think about it, because if you were in a country like America, forget Australia so much, but if you were in a country like America, you could put Hulu on. On your little, I mean, basically, it's a portable television beside your bed with internet access for being able to access net radio, net television, and so forth beside your bed. I think it's a brilliant idea. I think it's so clever. It'll never come to market.
No, because it's impractical. It's incredibly impractical. Can we bring that up? It's just like, you can say that as much as you want, Dave, but look at all the other products that can do exactly the same thing. Your netbook. The iPad.
Maybe you have to hold all those
No,
items.
You don't. We've already found out that they're making a stand for
that's
that.
True,
and,
that's
and,
true.
And the netbook can be propped somewhere and flipped up. And you know what? I bet you in 10 seconds I could find an application for my computer which would work as an alarm clock. So, Dave, it's a stupid piece of intel.
All right, so what is the other brilliant concept that they're coming up with right now?
Which... Now, this one actually does excite me, which is the concept that they are taking the idea of the PSP, which is obviously failing and falling apart. And you can say to
me... Digital Angel in the chat room has already said that their woes have been since the PSP, so...
Yeah, look, I mean, PSP was... No, I'm sorry. PSP was an amazing product when it came out.
Sure, but nobody bought it.
No one bought it because it was still associated with games.
Way overpriced. For a portable device, when it first came out, it was way overpriced.
What was it, like 400?
No, it was more than that. When it first came out, I mean, not the Go, I'm talking about the PSP.
I know. Shane, how much was the original one? Shane got one very early on.
Yeah, I think it was at least near 5.
Yeah, well, it was 4 or 5. I didn't think that was ridiculous. But yeah, admittedly, it was still expensive. But basically, the concept is that they're going to take it away, and God hopes that we don't get something that looks like the Go. But the concept behind it is taking the phone element of Sony and now combining it. So it's basically like Walkman didn't work, so we'll put it in a phone.
I'm sorry.
PSP doesn't work, so we'll put it in a phone.
I just had this image in my head of going to take a phone call having the little joystick going.
Oh God! Look, but the like I was saying, the idea.
Can you imagine trying to dial a number with a D-pad?
No.
Anyway, sorry.
My hope is, look, the PSP as a design, as a shape, which I can't really do very closely, but if you haven't seen one, you've been under a rock because we've
basically... Go into a game store and have a look at one.
Exactly. The concept, shape-wise, is great. Now what I want is a touchscreen. That's all that needs. That's all that needs. Maybe slightly better shaping and a second goddamn D-pad.
No, because then you got two sticking in your ear.
No, because they're flat. They're right up against the console. It'd be okay.
Fair enough,
no. But if the PSP Go had a touchscreen on the front of it, right? You use the touchscreen for the phone applications of it. You use that for your dialing. You use that for your Facebook, blah, 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 blah. And then you slide it open and you've got buttons, physical control, and you're back into the gaming world. Very simple, very easy to do, and just requires a slight bit of, you know, revamping and a whole new mark and a whole new design team. Those are the two things they need. If they do that, this could sell. I mean, almost, if not better, than the iPad.
Well,
why?
Sony already has a really good market foothold in the phone world.
Exactly.
So they could capitalize on that because the Sony Ericsson phones are everywhere.
Look, if they can still keep the price down to $500-$600. Or at least come out with a device which could give you access to all PlayStation's games and Sony's game and so on and so forth, but just have decent plans for them and have the applications reasonably priced. Like, they need to learn now from what iPad has done.
There was actually another rumor about them doing a tablet as well, wasn't there?
Yes, Sony and HP. I found out about an HP one as well.
Right.
The HP one's looking very, very cool.
The Sony one that they're saying would have the same horsepower as PlayStation 2. Is that right?
Exactly.
That's an interesting notion.
Look, I mean, if they can get the gaming side of this working and come up with a control system that could be played, then yeah, I reckon this could sell. And I reckon it could be a possibility for them, I think.
So Shane, let's throw the gauntlet down to you. Do you think that a PSP phone could turn Sony's fortunes around?
Probably not.
That's not an overwhelming form of excitement.
No, yeah, you know, that really, that did nothing for
no,
me.
No, I mean, what are they going to call it? PSP
phone.
Ericsson?
Yeah, no. The naming marketing side of things is not necessarily something that, is necessarily a problem. But you don't think that this could be the one saving grace for them? You don't think
no,
that...
No, I mean, if Sony's doing so well with selling Ericsson, they don't really need to do it in PSP.
No, I mean, I agree. But look, I would like to see them try. They have the money to fail again and continue on.
They have very deep pockets.
This is more of a gaming device than a phone to begin with.
Yeah, I think that's their marketing strategy. PSP. Yeah.
Yeah, no. All right. Well, look, I'm sticking to my guns.
Digital Angel in the chat room has basically said that the PSP Go had a vibrating feature, it would have been a lot more popular. filthy girl. All right,
moving along.
Moving right along. All right. I'm going to bring this one up because I actually wrote a huge blog post about it. And if you haven't read the blog post about it, go to geekactually.com and look for it.
Great.
It's in the last couple of days. But Mr. Atkinson is in the news again. For those who don't know or haven't been reading the newspaper, Michael Atkinson, who we know is a great critic of the R rating for games and so forth, has come out in he hasn't actually made the statement. Another expert has made a statement. But what we found out is that Atkinson actually has donated money and is basically helping fund a group that is basically declaring that gaming is the violence in games to the youth is stronger than tobacco is to cancer as the threat. To the quote of psychologist Dr. Wayne Warburton, he actually said it's much greater than the effect of smoking on lung cancer is the gaming to violence in the youth. What do we think of this?
All I have to say is WTF. Seriously, like, I don't even understand how you can put that connection together.
And it's funny.
Who's backing this up? Who?
Okay, well, that's
doctor psychologist.
His name is Dr. Wayne Warburton, and who I've never heard of before. But what's really interesting is that this came out. It was an article in news.com.au, and I actually started writing a blog post about it, saying how ridiculous this statement was. which led me to reading through this entire document, this entire article, and starting to get more angry as I was going through the page. And I won't bore you all with it now because there is a big long blog post you can read. But bottom line is that the company, the group is the, give me a second here. What's the name of the actual group? The actual group is a government department. And it is, they run, the grant is to support a project from this government department called Know Before You Go. And the concept of this Know Before You Go is that it's basically supposed to be a setup where if you have children and you look at a film and it's got a rating, they pick up after where the rating leaves off, and they would say, as their example in the article, Charlotte's Web is rated G, but the council would then say to parents that you got to be careful, it may not be suitable to children under 8 to watch alone because there are distressing scenes. Well, you know what? If the child is under 8, I probably wouldn't have them watching Charlotte's Web anyway.
Have them alone lying in a room.
Apparently that this is actually a department or a project of the Australian Council on Children and the Media. And they also have another project, and this is when my blood pressure started to boil, because their other project, and this is the one that I read, and you said WTF before, I would put WTF with many, many exclamation points. They have another project called Choosing Fright-Free, Fight-Free Viewing, an Intervention for Parents of Under Sevens. And one of the things that they did was they warned parents to approach the show Bananas in Pajamas with caution because it contains slapstick comedy. They went on to basically explain that slapstick comedy can make them think that things don't actually hurt when real life they do. And all I can say to that is, where the hell are the parents? Yeah. You know, the parents are there to explain these things to their children. You say, oh, look at the teddy bears hitting each other.
Dave, I'm going to go one step further and go, if it's 7, you haven't learned that if you, you know, do these sort of things, you get hurt. You haven't been a very active 7-year-old.
Well, there is that too.
That's a 7-year-old, like, I love, what's his name? Dylan Moran said it once. He's like, 7-year-olds, like, have superhuman strength. At 7, you could run around and, like, you know, jump into open traffic and walk out with a bruise. Like, I mean, kids just naturally get into situations, get messed up, and then run to the parents crying.
I agree with you completely.
And it's like, this is a natural part of evolution, like, to learn.
Children get grazed knees, you know? Yeah. They get bumps and bruises, you know? This happens. All right, but I think what really started to get under my skin on this, other than that, which was actually really getting under my skin, but when you actually dig deeper and deeper and deeper into this, what you actually start to find out is that they are, the comparison between video games and smoking was actually first made by the Australian Christian lobby. And it all gets down. When you start digging deep enough into all of these things, it all comes down to these good Christian values. And the point that my blog post was making in all of this was, stop shoving your Christian values down my throat, all right? We're not all Christians out there. Mm. We don't all have exactly the same way of thinking. We are, I'm going to get into a rant here, but we are, for the most part, a secular society, right? Yeah. We have secular laws in place, and there has to be a separation of church and state. Mm. It is an absolute imperative. Otherwise, we become a theocracy, and we all know how well those work. All right. We can look around the world and look at theocracies. Let's look at Iran or, you know, or any number of the Middle Eastern countries that are out there. It doesn't work. Right. Mm. We have a secular society. When we have that, as an example, I brought up in the article, we have public schools. They teach at this point in time in Australia, they teach scripture in public schools. Mm. I'm sorry. It doesn't belong there. Mm. OK. Public schools funded by public money are secular. Religion, I don't begrudge you teaching your child religion, but that is something for the church, and that is something for the parents to teach their children. If you really want them to learn religion in school, send them to a private Christian school or a private religious school. Public schools, there shouldn't be scripture. Because I'll give you one prime example, and this is something you need to go read in this article that I wrote. Mm. But one prime example is my son goes to non-scripture because he is not a religious one. My family has never been religious. He goes for 1 hour a week. They segregate all the children apart from each other. So for 1 hour a week, all the children know they are all different from each other, which is not something we want to be teaching. Mm. We want togetherness. You know, we want brotherhood. We don't want to separate them all so they can all point at each other, right? Mm. So for 1 week, the Catholics get to say, they're the Muslims, they're the Hindus, they're the this, you know, and so forth. Coming out of non-scripture, a Catholic boy walks up to, at the time, my 9-year-old son and says, you don't believe in God, you're going to hell.
Yes, I'm sure.
This is what comes out of this. So my son at 9 doesn't understand all this, gets very distraught at this. One last thing. They don't need to have any qualifications to teach scripture. So for 1 hour a week, parents, if you're listening, 1 hour a week, you have completely unqualified people, volunteers, coming in off the street and teaching your children.
Mm. But anyway.
Anyway, that's not tech. But the point is that all of these arguments against the R rating, against the reintroduction of an X rating for movies, and against the and the internet censorship filter are all grounded in the fact that these people who are trying to bring these in are ultra-conservative religious people. They're bringing their values to us, right?
And it doesn't help through, like, to bring it back to where we were starting, it doesn't really help the whole situation, what you're seeing there. It doesn't help the video game thing to hear just incredibly unfair comments like that. Like, they talk about gamers being more dangerous than bikers and stuff like that. We can laugh that off. We can just laugh at the ridiculousness of that. But if you're telling parents this, this is what got, what's his name? The American guy, disbarred, help me out here. I was telling you his name today.
Oh, you were too. Oh,
dude, help me out here.
After 40 minutes of fiddling with my video adapter, you're going to hit me with that?
Yeah, I know. We're having a terrible day for memory. Jack Thompson, that's it. Jack Thompson was disbarred in America for saying things like this. Michael Atkinson has now hit this level. He's hit the level that, you know, I thought maybe we were going to avoid. Maybe we were going to keep it slightly professional. But Jack Thompson got disbarred for basically directly creating a slander campaign against gaming. He was telling people that things like in GTA, your goals in the game are to sell child pornography and sexually molest people. And he was telling people this with no facts, proof, or knowledge. And the idea of connecting, like, cancer and gaming together in the same sentence is just violent.
It makes my skin crawl.
Yeah.
Shane, have you got anything on that one? You got any thoughts on that? Or have I ranted your ear off?
No, I don't have any thoughts at the moment. It's just a big WTF.
I actually came up to the studio on... it was Monday, actually. I came up to the studio on Monday, and I thought to myself, I'll just do a little bit of fiddling around on the website. I might write a little couple of posts and so forth. Came across this article.
No.
3 hours later, I left the studio after sitting there writing this goddamn blog post. I was so angry by the end of it. So, yeah, do go and have a look at that. And if you have comments or if you want to spread it around, I encourage anybody who reads it, if you agree with what I say in that blog post, please share it on Facebook with your friends. Get that article out there because it really I've already had one person approach me to use it in their university because they're confronting a lot of these topics right now. And she said, can I share this article with the rest of the uni? I said, absolutely, go for it. I have no problem with people opposing my view. Flame on is all I can say. All right. Moving right along. I just very, very quickly, next couple of stories are actually very quick ones. First of all, I'm going to say in Australia, they're actually thinking about changing the law. They're now saying that the teenagers out there who are out there sexting each other, that's where you actually text nude photos of each other, to each other, I should say. They now want to actually increase the penalty on that. If you're a teenager and you sext another teenager, you will be up for 15 years in jail. Because they're actually going to make it child pornography. And they're going to say that you guys are spreading child pornography. And all I can say to that is, oh, my God, have we forgotten? Yeah. Have the politicians and adults forgotten what they did when they were teenagers? This is just teenagers screwing around, man. Leave it alone. God.
We've got, like, I mean, it makes me kind of laugh, the concept that, you know, like 10 years ago it was, you know, it was just a little bit less obvious. And, you know, it got a little bit less leaked onto the net and became, you know, all sorts of wrong things and Facebook pictures that were, you know, unsightly or whatever. This is just an extension, like an we're just seeing too much of it now, I think, is the difference. Like, it's that whole same step that happens.
We're obsessing by it too much.
Yeah, I know, but this happens every generation, though, Dave. Like, I mean, you know, every generation we become more and more, you know, open with this sort of stuff and the generation before gets the same level of offensiveness towards
it's just ridiculous.
It's just the idea of putting jail time on this.
And Popshot so if I'm over 16, I can do that? No, if you're over 16, it's still child pornography, dude.
Yep.
The only time that it is actually legal to send nude photos to each other is if you're both over the age of 18, over the age of consent. Now, the age of consent used to be 16 in this country, but they've been changing laws steadily in the background. So I wouldn't go doing this. And you know what? The first trick is they got to catch you. But
and the best question is going to be the same question we had with the school, which is if you stop somebody, go, aha, the person's going to be sitting there going,
how do you know?
How did you know I was texting that?
So I just think it's ridiculous. I sit there and go, kids will be kids, teenagers will be teenagers. You know what? Teenagers have sex. They do get together. They get naked with each other. You know, adults get to come to terms with this, you know.
No, you'd think so, but they don't. They forget about it at a certain age.
I don't know. Why do I still remember this? Anyway, because I'm a child.
Because you're a freak, Dave.
I'm a freak and a child. I'm a child at heart, I guess. All right, this is another short one for you. A survey of 27,000 adults in 26 countries conducted by BBC World Services showed that 78% of internet users believe that the web gave them greater freedom, while 9 in 10 said it was a good place to learn. Basically, the question was, do they believe that it was a human basic right to have internet?
No. Let's skip the house of the discussion for a minute, Dave, and let's just jump straight to the bit where you tell everyone what the answer to it was, because we can discuss it afterwards, because I love the answer to that question.
Yes, the majority of people around the world believe that it is a basic human right to have internet access.
Wow! Just wow!
Wow!
Like, I mean, can I just bring up how incredibly ridiculous that is? Mm. There are differences, right? Water, that's a right. Food, that's a right. Mm. Shelter, you're pretty much going to die without that. Mm. Internet usage. That one there seems a little bit obscure.
Yeah, I think if you went and asked the starving Ethiopian kids whether they would like a handful of rice or an hour of internet connection, I think they'd take the rice somehow.
Yeah, no, I'm pretty sure we should probably separate the idea of it being a human right and just explain that it is something that probably bridges a lot of gaps between people. It opens worlds for people that think. It teaches better than any other,
absolutely,
any other device, any other source in the world, internet teachers. But human rights going that little bit too far for me.
According to the study, it said that 65% of respondents in Japan saying that they did not feel that they could express their opinions safely online, whereas 70% of respondents from Japan as well, Mexico and Russia said that they could not live without the internet. yes, I found this study actually laughable, actually, because I sit there and think, you know what? Yes, we all like the internet. We all need the internet for, you know, basic work. But you know what? My lovely wife, Katie, downstairs pointed out just before we came on the show today, 20 years ago, we didn't have the internet, and we survived quite happily.
Oh, you know?
In fact, 20 years ago, we didn't have cell phones, you know, and we survived quite happily. In fact, there are many times, have you ever thought about it? There are many times where I sit there and go, you know what, 15 years ago, people would have to actually wait to call me.
Yeah.
You know, I would go out. I might go out for an hour. And when you come back and you answer the phone, they don't immediately say, where have you been? I haven't been able to find you. God damn it. Where have you been? They would have said, oh, you've been out, have you? You know, it's it wasn't immediately this assumption that everybody needs to be in contact every minute of the day.
I still find that a little bit daunting at times. Like, there's always that part of me that just goes, life was so much more peaceful when I actually could go out for a day and just not have my phone with me.
I think we should make a pact. I think, for, I don't know, let's start small. 1 hour each day, we should just put our phones on the table and leave it.
Hell no. If I did that, I'd be killed. I'd get some phone call from my boss saying, there's a computer we can't find. You didn't put something on it correctly. Where the hell is it? Call me back, customers in front of me. There's no exception for that anymore. And then I would get blasted.
But I think there should be.
Oh, absolutely, Dave. But I don't think the three of us are going to change it.
Well, I'm going to make a concerted effort to try and put my phone down for at least an hour a day, I think. I'm just going to put it aside, turn it on to silent, and leave it on the table. Chat room, you with me? No, Digital Angel says she can't do it.
She can't do it. I agree.
Psydog says, what is this madness? All right, chat room's not with me. All right, let's move on.
Yeah. No, all right. Dude, we've come too far now. The idea of not having a cell phone close is just too much.
I live in hope. But one day, you know, life will get simpler, you know, after the zombie apocalypse. You know? All right.
I'm still waiting for that.
How about this for a neat little piece of tech? There is going to be an app. There is an app being developed. Of course, we actually require a piece of hardware to be put into the phone. And this was actually one of the rumors I forgot to mention to you guys, called iKey. And the idea is that you actually have the sensor inside the phone and the software, and basically you use your phone to access your house, your car, and so forth. You just basically have your keypad combinations all in your phone, because there are a lot of people who have keyless entry already, but they have to carry a keyless entry and their phone. This way you have it all in one device, and you don't have to carry a second device. Do we see danger with this anywhere? I see danger with the idea that we lose that one device. We literally just curl up into a small fetal position.
Well, I would imagine you'll still have to have a password to access the program.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is, if you lost your phone,
you're
not going to be able to get in your house, you're not going to be able to get in your car.
You're fucked.
And talk about gimmick, though. There is actually one piece of this which I think you should think is neat tech. It's fun tech, which is on the iKey. One of the patents on it apparently is for doing combinations. And you actually fire it up, and then you actually turn your phone in your hand to do the combination lock. It actually rotates with the accelerometer. I thought that was cute. All right, moving right along. You guys aren't impressed.
I think it's cute. I just think that it's a piece of software that, like you said, is probably more dangerous than it is useful.
Yeah, well, look,
to have a backup device of some sort or something.
You'd end up carrying two phones. So you might as
or
well
at least
carry
hiding
phone.
A phone under a rock.
Yeah, or what if somebody uses this to unlock other people's doors?
Well, I think they'd be biometrically protected, and it would have to have the right codes in it. And, I mean, there'd be safeguards. I mean, there's people with keyless entry on their cars already. You know, you carry that little keyless fob with you. Hmm. All right, something more up your line, Josh. Valve has now confirmed that the Mac version of Steam is coming. We talked about this on platforms.
Ew.
But we got a little bit more information, and I think we're still a little bit confused about this. Not entirely confused, just a little bit confused. Mm. But according to them, the games that are on Steam will be playable on both a Mac and a PC.
Yeah.
Well, but that doesn't make sense.
Yeah, well, I think it's just going to take time.
Oh, so they're omitting that point from the press statement. They're omitting the point that it's going to take time to actually port all
of the
games.
Well, we did some research on this before we actually started the show, and what we managed to find out was that they have decided definitely against an emulation system, which you and me both agreed would have been the simplest way to actually have done that. It would have been the simplest way to actually have had that system would have been to run some sort of a program which then emulates. But the truth is, this has been done before. A lot of people have actually been trying to emulate a system using sort of Mac, you know, PC interpreters and Wine and all sorts of crazy programs to try and create
Steam
already.
Yeah, but today with Intel Macs, it would be much easier to do this.
No, I mean currently.
Yeah, right.
Like, even so. And it's difficult to run a program which is a client which runs games as well. It doesn't really work. So I'm glad they're not, otherwise the gaming would have come and went because no one would have enjoyed the experience.
Yeah, that's true. So my first thought when they mentioned this was something like Crossover, which is that program that you can run which allows you to, it's not like a full virtual system, it just allows you to run particular programs. And if they came up with a Steam Crossover type client that they could allow all their games to run in Crossover mode. But that's not what they're saying. They are actually saying that they're going to be native games. And the first statement on this was going to be that all of Valve's games are going to be Mac and PC. And I think you're right. I think the goal is that they're going to try and port all of the games on Valve. So they're going to need the help of all those developers out there, try and get them ported into a native Mac format. The most exciting part of this announcement, though, was not that. I thought the most exciting part was that they were going to make it so that they were completely cross-platform. So if you have a Mac at work and a PC at home, let's say, you can have the Mac version on one, the PC version on the other. You play the game, and when you get home, you can then play the PC version up to the same point you were at the Mac version. So it's just literally...
It's an amazing idea.
I want to see it work. I really want to see it work. And
I think they want to see it work.
Yeah, I do. Yeah, I think they do. Apparently, according to this article in Slashdot, it says that they are really putting out Mac support to all source developers. Because
good for them, though.
They are. That's fantastic for them. And the other thing that Valve claimed, which I think is the big step in the right direction for Mac, is the fact that they called them what type of gaming platform, Josh?
What type of gaming platform?
A tier...
Tier one gaming platform.
Which
is scary. It really is. Yeah. Like, I mean, I just mean from the point of view that to call them tier one is a little premature. I think they have the ability to be a tier one gaming. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. They have the potential to be tier one. But to call them tier one now is jumping the gun.
I think what they're basically saying by that is that the Mac has come of age to the point where this machine can compete with...
And it has the power and resources, and that's the big thing. And I've been waiting for this day for a long time because I actually feel a little bit sad for my Mac friends that sit there with the computers that can do everything they want them to and not gaming. The one thing I want to know is when gaming starts coming to Mac, does that mean Mac will no longer be as reliable as it used to be? Because we all know games fuck up computers.
Yeah, and with more people starting to use it, so let's say Steam is there, the gamers start to move to Mac, we start to see a huge uptake of the Mac market, they start to get like 30-40% of market share, the virus writers start to say, oh, viable target.
Yeah.
You know, and that's when they start coming after it. Shane, yes.
Oh, yeah. We've just got a quick question in the chat room here from Popshot. He says, what about the source mods that are actually made by the community?
Well, then the community will also have to write.
I'm pretty sure that Valve will probably release the right software for people
Oh, no, they've actually already stated that, dude. They've stated that the kit will be available. So that probably means that the community-based stuff will still be out there. It's just that people will have to rewrite it.
And The dedicated servers are for PC and Mac together?
The Mac players will be playing with the PC servers. Okay. So that's also
awesome.
Fantastic.
That's awesome.
So if somebody playing Team Fortress on Mac will be able to play players on the PC side of it who are playing Team Fortress on the PC. I think it's fantastic. Yeah. I think look, the Mac computer, for all the people that want to sit there and go, oh, PCs are better, Macs are better, PCs are better, and all that age-old argument that goes backwards and forwards, the bottom line is they're basically the same goddamn machine. They run a different operating system, but they're all just circuit boards and wires, guys, and they all basically do the same job. Mm. The problem that we've had up until this point has been that Mac market share has been small. It's growing all the time, but it has been small. So game developers have not seen the value in writing games for the Mac. The market wasn't big enough.
Exactly.
If you introduce Steam to the Macintosh, you're going to find people who wouldn't buy the Mac purely because they want to play games will now suddenly buy Macs.
Exactly.
And so we're going to see market share go up real fast.
Exactly. It will also see the decline of Macs with PC software installed.
Yes, because a lot of people won't need to have Windows partitions anymore. Mm-hmm. That's right, exactly. So yeah, we might actually see people like VMware start to suffer a little bit.
Wow.
Because they'll start to go, ooh, because you can run Office and Crossover, which is a much smaller program. You don't need to have a full virtual machine. Interesting. Keep our eyes on that one, too. Something to look forward to in the future. Alrighty. That idea, by the way, of being able to sync across your devices is also coming up in Microsoft Story, which we're going to do in 2 weeks. We're going to do a mobile phone thing in 2 weeks, and we're going to talk about Microsoft's latest invention, which is kind of intriguing. So there's a little teaser for you for 2 weeks from now. All right. Just a one very quick one, and then we're going to get into our topic, because we are actually running just a little bit late, I think, aren't we? I don't know. Why is that not recording? Oh, goddamn, I don't know. I don't know. Tech is all over the place tonight. All right. Anyway, the point is that Google has been asked again to put up its information in its YouTube case against Viacom. For those who don't know, Viacom has been, it's been a long-standing case. Viacom has said that YouTube has often breached copyright by showing clips from the Colbert Report and Saturday Night Live and all these other Viacom properties. YouTube has defended itself. Google, being its parent company, has been fighting this battle for a long time. And we now have this point where basically Google is saying to the courts, just give us a little bit more time. Just a little. We just need a little bit more time, please. Just a little bit. Because so what it would seem to me, the takeaway that I got from this, was that it's okay for Google to have all of our information, but they don't want to share theirs. And I just think that's a little bit stinky. So I'd like to see Google hand over some records. I think it's time to open up Google a little bit and find out what's actually inside that beast.
They're probably cleaning up all the stuff they haven't done all the taxes they haven't claimed up. They're just sitting there with that guy standing in front going, just wait. Yeah. And this guy's behind him going,
did I ever tell you that story about Microsoft? When Microsoft was facing the DOJ for the Department of Justice for its antitrust case, Bill Gates was actually called to the stand at one point during during that whole antitrust case. Yeah. And he was asked to produce the financial records for Microsoft. And he said, no, we can't do that. I'm sorry, because Microsoft is a completely paperless office, right? We have everything computer files, so we can't just produce you paper ledgers and stuff like that. And the next day after he testified, I'm not exaggerating. The next day, his book came out, which he had written all about the birth of Microsoft and so forth. And in the book, he actually says, Microsoft is desperately trying to become a paperless office because, you know, there's just so much paperwork. And he was swiftly called back to the stand. So, yeah, be careful what you guys say out there, because you know what? You always contradict yourselves eventually. All right, we're going to get into this, our major topic. It's going to be a little bit shorter one this week. Last week was a really long one. We're just going to do a little shorter one because this was just something really funny, guys. We were actually racking our brains trying to figure out what we were going to talk about this week, quite frankly. And this fell from the sky. And I just thought we should have a look at this. All right, we're going to start this off by playing a little clip from This Week in Technology. This is This Week in Technology, episode 238. This is Leo Laporte's podcast. It does go out live on video, so we have video for those who are in our chat room. But really, it's finished product. It's an audio podcast. What the backstory to this, I've heavily abridged this. This is not complete because, of course, it goes for an hour and a half. This is a heavily abridged 2 minutes something. But basically the backstory is Conan O'Brien, the stand-up comedian who used to host his show, basically is bored because he got fired, if we all remember the big fiasco. And one day he turned around and decided that he was going to change somebody's life. And so he picked at random a person on Twitter who only had like 2 followers and just followed her to see what would happen. And of course, she ended up with about 15,000 followers because Conan decided to change her life. Well, this was Leo Laporte's answer to this, and there is reason why we're talking about Leo Laporte, but just have a look at this first of all.
Did you see that Conan O'Brien added a random woman to his Twitter account?
Yeah.
He says, I've decided to follow someone at random. She likes peanut butter and gummy dinosaurs. Sarah Killen, your life is about to change.
And now how many followers does she have now?
I don't know. We got to check.
I saw that when it happened on the recommended list. I was clicking refresh on her page, and she was going up by like hundreds of followers like per second.
She's got 15,500, her Twitter account. Let's see. Wait a minute now. Let's see if we can get her even more followers.
See if we can break Conan's record.
We should take another person at random and see if we can overtake that account.
Oh, really?
I got an idea. Random guy. Try Clayton Morris.
Yeah. Yeah. No,
for those who don't know, that's Clayton Morris.
So, do you want to pick somebody at random? Let's do it. Who wants to pick? Kevin, I'm going to put you in charge. Pick somebody completely random.
Okay. Complete random. I'll do a search for something on Twitter. We'll find a random.
So Conan
had 3 followers before.
For those listening, Kevin is Kevin Rose.
You know what we could do? Is we could create this account and not tell anybody what it is, but just to kind of drop some hints throughout the show and see if people could find it and follow it.
Like an Easter egg hunt.
Like an Easter egg hunt. And then one of those followers would get an Apple iPad.
Now you're talking. Like, there's nothing like random. A good gimmick.
Oh, hold on. I think I may have found a user.
Okay.
Lisa Tickled Pink says, I hate technology.
Oh, that's it.
Oh, perfect.
And her handle is Lisa Tickled Pink?
Uh-huh. And her last tweet was, I hate technology.
That sounds like the right person for us.
She's got 2 followers.
2 followers, ladies and gentlemen. All right, let's see what we can do.
They gave him a handicap.
But yeah, she's in New Zealand.
Yeah, perfect.
Watch Leo's reaction about the email.
I do not know her.
Yeah, Kevin, what's up?
All right.
Yeah.
All right. I want everybody who's watching this show right now.
This is the woman who gave you bot worms.
Yeah, seriously.
All right. I'm going to give her 3 followers. I'm going to follow her right now. She now has 3 followers.
She's got 59 now. 73.
What?
How fast is it going up?
Yeah, refresh.
Oh, man. All right. This is good. So everybody followed Lisa Tickled Pink. And we'll
she's 163.
201. Let's see how high we can get her before next week's episode. We'll check at the end of the episode and see how Lisa Tickled Pink is doing.
April 3rd is the ship.
She has email notifications turned on.
Oh, no.
When you get a new follower.
Oh, no. I'm sorry, Lisa. Oh, no.
What you guys do?
Oh, my God.
All right, so she had email notifications turned on. And just to
she
let you
has
know,
15,000. Do you know how long that would take to clean up?
Just to let you know that by the end of Twit, now, when this was actually recorded, it would have been nighttime in New Zealand. She would have woken up in the morning. By the time morning reached I think she had something along the lines of 6,000 or 7,000 followers. So that's 6,000 or 7,000 emails sitting in her email box. All right, so... it's all fun and games until somebody gets hurt, really, when you think about it. And you got to ask yourself, what really kind of caught my eye about this whole story was, you know, David Letterman was heavily criticized a few years back now because he gave out somebody's phone number on air. It was just at random. Basically, he was just making a joke and, you know, he said, you know, we'll call this person. And he pulled them out of a phone book and made the phone call. And, of course, that person ended up getting hit by lots of prank calls, and they had changed their number, and Letterman had to apologize, and it was a big, big, big storm, storm in a teacup. You know, Twitter is a mass form of communication, and people do have things like their email notifications turned on and stuff like that. Pulling what is essentially a practical joke, you know, is it responsible? You know, I mean, does this sort of rate on the same sort of category as, you know, calling up the local 7-Eleven and saying, you know, do you have John West in a can? Well, you should let him out. I mean, what do you guys think?
I don't know. I think the it's a lot different to a phone number. Like, as much as, you know, technology has changed and so on and so forth, the essence behind the difference between phone and social networking are two very different things. Like, phone is very personal. Like, I mean, you'll notice a lot of people, especially a lot of girls that you would meet out at a club, would be more likely to give you an email address or a Facebook account because there's that access to block. There's the fact that nothing can really be attached to it as long as you're carefully monitoring what you put up. So the problem with social networking is the fact that you're agreeing to this sort of stuff. When you sign up for a Twitter account or something like that, if someone follows you, then people have rights to, you know, follow you if they want to. There's actually no reason that that you can sort of stand up against that sort of thing. At the same time, there's always going to be the line, you know, like, you know, be careful how you use this kind of power that someone like it does.
Let's be very clear. For those who don't listen to Leo Laporte, now Leo Laporte is one of my gods. And for those who don't listen to Leo Laporte, this man has built a network. He runs podcasts and he goes out live with all of his podcasts. And over the last couple of years in particular, he's really built this network up. When he did a live coverage of the Apple iPad announcement, he had 270,000 live viewers who were watching him. He is essentially an IPTV network. His downloads of his podcasts are in the hundreds of thousands, and he produces many, many, many of them and has other people who use his studio facilities for their podcasts. So the man is a very powerful player. Now, being a very powerful player, you've also got to ask yourself, that means he has a lot of responsibility.
Oh, yeah.
When you think about that. And when you sit there and go, how must Lisa Tickled Pink have felt when waking up to all those emails? Well, in fact, I can actually tell you how she felt because I actually happen to have video of her. So she was actually on a radio show on, I don't know, do you guys know this one, Kiwi FM? That's the name of the radio station.
Funnily enough,
Radio station Kiwi FM. I don't know.
Funnily enough, dude, when you're in New Zealand, it doesn't mean you know everything about.
Well,
every
I don't know where it
Zealand.
Is, so I don't know what where. I can understand that. I've said I'm from LA, and people go, "Oh, I know such and such. Do you know them?" It's like 7 million people in that city, dude. No, I don't know them. No, I just because I don't know anything about Kiwi FM. I don't know if it's a small network. I mean, is it like saying Today FM here, which is all over the place, or is it, you know, just a small regional? Who knows? But I just thought if you guys actually knew the radio station itself. But if you don't, that's fine. It actually looks like kind of a backyard operation when you actually see the video. Basically, they set up a video chat between Leo Laporte and Kiwi FM to discuss what was going on. Awesome. It was all in good fun. Once again, this is heavily abridged, but this will introduce you to her and Leo's good nature about the whole thing. Here we go.
Now, joining me in the Kiwi studio is Lisa Etheridge. Good morning to you, Lisa.
Good morning.
Nice to have you in. Now this is all just a little bit strange. It's going to be really hard to kind of explain how this came together. So I'm also going to bring in Leo Laporte live from Petaluma, California via the TwitLive network. Hello to you, Leo.
Hey, Glenn. Hey, Lisa.
God, he just has that
now,
voice.
I'm so excited.
I'll get you to explain why I have Lisa here in the Kiwi studio.
I love his voice.
Please explain this.
Yeah, poor Lisa. She woke up Tuesday morning and all of a sudden her Twitter account was going crazy. So there's a television personality in the States named Conan O'Brien who recently lost his job. And he hasn't really had much to do. And
can I also just point
last
out
week
this
he randomly followed
how much
a person on Twitter.
Sound quality on his
well, this is actually locally recorded on Leo's end.
She's got about 15,000 followers. Actually so we do a show that's heard all over the world. I know it's heard in New Zealand and everywhere else called This Week in Tech. It's an internet show about technology. And we thought, well, we'd want to do the same thing. We had on the show with us Kevin Rose. I know you know who Kevin is, Glenn. He's the founder of DIGG.com and a very well-known internet celebrity.
We'll just talk this volume down for a minute because we actually saw him do the gag.
On the phrase,
but,
I hate technology.
So what we're looking at here, though, is that Leo basically is incredibly gracious about the whole thing. And he's basically saying, yeah, look, we're really sorry about what we did. And he's basically offering her compensation and all sorts of stuff to it. But he's got the money to be able to do that.
Because I hate technology. And at the time, you had 3 followers. And so we just thought, well, for a lark, we'll ask all
of our. He's got a short memory
because
if you remember back to the original clip,
he was
the third
show's
follower.
Heard by about 175,000 people, and at the time we were live, and a few thousand people were watching. They quickly followed you, and I think you're up to now 15,000 people who are watching your every move.
No, we're leaving the mics on purpose, Side Dog. It's got nothing to do with that. Side Dog in the chat room says, "Turn your mics off."
I apologize.
Apology accepted.
Thank you.
Apparently, the iPad is going to be
with this trouble. But Leo, why would you be apologizing?
Well, I feel we didn't ask Lisa. We didn't get her permission. We just did it, and it was kind of a crazy thing. Which, as if anybody listens to our show knows, it's live, and we do kind of strange things from time to time. So. I feel bad, but that's...
Yeah, I thought it was something that I'd done wrong, being so focused on technology. I buttons and, you know, why did I have all these people when my friends didn't? So it took me a while to figure that one out.
I should have said something.
And in fact, if you go to her Twitter feed, I think it's very funny that one of the first posts that she has when all this broke, she goes, I wish I was this popular in high school. As it turns out, it's all turned out very well because she is a student and she is working on a communications project. And basically, she suddenly has this inbuilt audience that she would have had to build otherwise. And as Leo says later in that interview, that Kiwi FM interview goes on for about 15 minutes. But by the end of it, he actually says to her, he goes, I'm glad I could help. But he's offered to pay her any compensation. So if she had email notifications turned on, or she had notifications being pushed to her mobile or anything and bills, he would take care of any compensation to take care of anything that he would have caused. Yeah. I don't think what he realizes, though, is that incoming text messages don't cost us. Mm. In America, incoming text messages cost you. So he's probably thinking that there's all this billing coming from the incoming text messages, but it doesn't work that way over here.
Nope.
Anyway, I'm not sure. Does it work that way in New Zealand, guys?
No, I don't think so. It's pretty similar to here. In fact, we're actually usually better. Like, you know how you guys incur a 22-cent
thing
for things? We don't do that in New Zealand. Not for our home phones, anyway.
That's just civilized. all right, so... All right, so I think we've pretty much covered it. The concept that I was coming up with on all this was that is it a breach of privacy in a sense? I mean, are we taking advantage of the fact that we can just it's like somebody going into Facebook, for instance, and I don't know what would be an example. Somebody going into Facebook, seeing your friend list, and trying to friend all of the friends in your friend list without knowing any of them. You know what I mean? It's like, is that what's the etiquette on this now?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I don't agree with that slide so much because it doesn't quite have the same level of creepiness that that does. It's not like you're trying to associate.
That's like stalking.
It's not like you're trying to associate yourself with everyone, you know, based on a particular thing. This lady has just had, you know, 15,000 people that have decided to become her friend. That, like, I mean, nothing in that is necessarily bad. Like, these people don't, you know, change her, any of her tweets in any way or form. So these people only hear what she's saying. So it's kind of like...
Yeah, but she's inundated with what they're saying, though.
Mm.
So, I mean, we're talking about... What
I thought you had to follow someone back to do that.
Good point.
Exactly.
Yeah, good point.
They have invaded no part of her world. All that's happened is she now has this amazing internet voice.
So really, the only downside...
One word she says reaches 15,000 people.
So the only thing that really would have been a nuisance would have been the deluge of email. on their
phone. Can you imagine waking up one morning having 4,000 emails, 9,000 emails?
So I guess...
I'd just give up on my account. I'd be like, fuck it, I'll get another one.
So I guess really, as soon as she turned off email notifications, everything would have been fine after that.
I just swore again, didn't I?
It doesn't matter.
No. One day I'll get used to that.
It doesn't matter. We don't have the audience of Leo Laporte. All right. The other point that I think this raises, though, is a well-motivated geek with a listening audience. Wow, what can you achieve in a very short period of time?
If that was me, my God, the things I could accomplish. No, seriously, dude, look at the power Leo has. Like, we've talked regularly about the concept of Leoing a site, whereas Leo, if Leo mentions you live, your site crashes.
Leo, can you mention us?
Then there's the other part of me that just sits there and goes, that man has literally just bestowed a small amount of power on you. There are people that can hear your voice all over the world now. And I would be nothing but gracious towards a man. Forget the iPad. That's awesome that he's giving him an iPad, but I would just be sitting there going, who cares? I now have a voice where I can say, I don't like this, and 15,000 people have to hear it.
Now, about that iPad, by the way, I would actually suggest to anybody listening to this in the next few days, or those who are in live, go follow Lisa Tickled Pink right now, because what Leo actually is doing is he's giving her an iPad. So on the release date in America, because he actually said this to her, because you're not getting the iPad till later, what he's going to do is he's going to buy her an iPad on April 3rd and mail it to her.
Hell yeah.
And he's going to pick one of her followers at random and send them one too.
Yeah, it's a 1 in 20,000
chance.
That's
right. But why not? It's 1 in 20,000 chance of getting the iPad early.
Dogs followed her.
I followed her as soon as I heard it. So yeah, go follow her. And also, we've got to get her numbers up, because we need her to be much, 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 much higher than Conan O'Brien's girl. Because the whole concept of this was to prove that motivated geeks could do this better than the celebrities could. So, what's the link? The link is at Lisa Tickled Pink. So, twitter.com, and her handle is Lisa Tickled Pink. So, go for it. Yeah, there you go. Somebody's put it up. Psyduck, thank you very much. All right, well, I guess that's it, guys. I don't think anything else.
I think we're done, dude. We're already over time. We should probably call it.
I think we got to call it now, just to let everybody know there won't be a video replay on this show because of all the mishaps at the beginning of this thing.
We're not having a good month.
We're not having a good month for video replay, but once again, the audio will be out online on time. It will actually be up tonight at some point. Let's do ourselves a little bit of housekeeping, and then we're going to get ourselves out of here. So first of all, if you like what we talk about or don't like about what we talk about, or you want to leave some ideas for shows or anything of the like, you can send your email to geektech@geekactually.com, or you can send us a voicemail at Sydney number 02-8011-3167. Yes, I have my cheat sheet for those who are in the super chat room. You can buy merchandise for the Geek Actually Network and the platform shows at cafepress.com.au/geekactually. And we do have some local plugging to do. First of all, we want to mention PALGN. Josh.
Yes, well, PALGN, along with Game, a local retail that's also in a few different places overseas, have banded together, along with Everybody Plays. What their concept behind what they're trying to do is they're doing a different approach to what most of our media here in Australia have done towards R18, and they're trying to come across on the point of view that R18 games should be to protect the children as opposed for something for us. Of course, we still want them, but the idea is that 15-year-olds shouldn't be playing things like GTA. An 18-year-old with a more mature handle on how life goes is much less susceptible to the things that are inside these games. Basically, what they want to do is they want to put a petition out to our government that says, look, we are more than responsible, and all we're trying to do is help here. We're not trying to hinder the government in any way. And basically, all they're asking you guys to do is go into your nearest game store and sign up one of the petitions they've got there, or you can go to PALGN's website, which is http://PALGN, that's PALGN, .com.au, and there's a section in there for the Everybody Plays.
They also have a direct link for that page as well, which is www.everyoneplays.org.au.
Yeah. Yes, and you can go to any one of these places and just sign up petitions just to try and help us stimulate. The fact that the discussion is over does not mean anything. All this means that is that 55,000 geeks have signed up petitions when they're in the game store. We are trying to reach further than that, and we are trying to get family members.
And let's not forget that Michael Atkinson is using that excuse. He's saying, yeah, yeah, there's all these petitions, but it's just gamers. The more he gets, the less he can use that excuse, because the more he gets, the number of gamers in Australia compared to the population, his figures aren't going to make sense.
Yeah, exactly. So, if you guys can just do that, just next time you're in a mall or whatever, you walk past a game store, go in, sign up for this. All this pushes towards the idea of R18 gaming in Australia, and that would be awesome.
Absolutely fantastic. All right. We're also going to push a couple of podcasts that we like to listen to. First of all, our good friends over at the Real Junkies podcast. They do tequila-fueled movie reviews. They're a lot of fun to listen to, and you can find them at weekendronin.com or search for them on iTunes. And we cannot do a show without mentioning our very good friends, Brad and Charlie.
Oh, yeah.
Over at the Movie Fan House podcast. They are moviefanhouse.com. They are movie reviews by fans for fans, and they are really, really good, and their production value is getting better every week, and their website is terrific, and they've got a new host, Jesse, and the show is just a lot of fun. And I'm not saying that just because Dave and I did a guest spot on the show. No, they are a lot of fun, and go have a listen to them as well. We also have to plug our own stuff, of course, because it's our stuff.
Yeah.
And first of all, we have to mention that on the Geek Actually podcast this Saturday, we have a very, very, very special guest coming.
Hey! I was just getting my hands in the right place.
All right, we have a very special guest coming.
No, you see, I'm all backwards now.
We are going to start the broadcast at 1 p.m. rather than 12 p.m. Be very clear if you come in to watch it live that we are starting at 1. That is because our special guest can't make it there before 1 o'clock, but Holly McKay, who is the...
But I probably imagine you and me will be there from 12. Oh, we'll so feel free to show up and chat with us.
We will be there talking and making sure everything is all ready. Holly McKay, who is the entertainment reporter for FoxNews.com. She goes to all the red carpet events, and she knows everybody in Hollywood, is here for a very short break.
And we are so proud.
And we are so proud. She's going to come into the studio and have a chat with us and talk to us, and we're going to be reviewing Alice in Wonderland. Shudder. But she was actually at the red carpet event in L.A. for Alice in Wonderland, so she'll be able to tell us a little bit about that as well. We also have Miran Lee coming in, so it should be a fun show on Saturday. That is the Geek Actually podcast, geekactually.com/live for the live show, or go to iTunes and find the podcast. And the other show we do is...
Just a little show.
The little show called Platforms. Now, Josh, tell us about Platforms.
Platforms is awesome, and that's all you really have to know. I think the biggest advantage to next week is going to be the fact that we have Dave back, because it was a very different show last week. It was awesome. It was great fun. Thank you again, Job and Nathan, for showing up. But it did lack the Dave-ness that we usually have in the show, and it will be nice to have him showing up and throwing some random comment, probably within 5 seconds of being live. That will offend some entire culture. But look, we are a games podcast. We go out much differently to anyone else. As I said last week, we are really like the drunkling, rambling man in the corner of a bar. we are knowledgeable on what we talk about, but we try to do it in a lighthearted way, and we are going to be as brutally honest as we need to. If you don't believe me, check out our Heavy Rain review. But yeah, guys, please check it out Monday. 8 o'clock. We would love to see you there.
Fantastic. All right, we're going to get ourselves out of here. And for the first time in a long time, I can actually say that the studio isn't overpoweringly hot.
Yeah, that's it's amazing. Actually, it's so nice. We don't even have the fan on.
I know. It's been a nice cool day here in Sydney, and the studio's cooled right down. And I want to know why Digital Angel in the chat room is going beardy tisk tisk tisk.
Because you took a jab at Alice in Wonderland. She thinks it's the
Okay, well, let's wait till Saturday, and we'll get into this in great detail. All right, we're going to get out of here. Anything, any last words, Shane?
No, if anybody wants to find me, just search my name through Facebook.
I forgot the independent pushing. Sorry. let me just start that again. Shane, how can people find you?
If anybody wants to find me, just search my name on Facebook.
Cool, cool.
Fantastic. And Josh?
Your local pub, as usual. but failing that, if you guys want to find me, I will be at Cockatoo Island tomorrow, drinking drinks and playing games that aren't out yet. So woo me.
Woo-wee, go you. And you can
Yeah, and Facebook.
Just look for
Josh Philpott. I'm sure you
can. There you go. You can also follow me on Facebook personally, but I would actually say follow the fan page, Geek. Actually, it's probably a little bit easier to follow. You can follow me on Twitter, twitter.com/DaveMcVeigh, and my personal website is back up. It's a little bit temporary, but it is back up. That is www.davidmcveigh.net, and you can find out a little bit more about me personally if you're interested at all.
You're lucky I can't swear
Digital
on the show.
Digital Angel, way cool. All right, we're going to get out of here. Just remember that we're the geeks, so you don't have to be, and we try and keep it all accessible for you, and we'll catch you all next week.